The Gestalt Gardener podcast is brought to you by Varicosity Vein Center, providing health assessment screenings and compassionate care to improve your vascular functionality and quality of life. Our doctors and vein specialists offer solutions to painful varicose veins, spider veins, and other venous diseases to our patients. Now offering complimentary vein screenings in Jackson, Madison, and Ridgeland. Information and appointment scheduling at varicosityveincenter.com.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.
Okie dokie, folks. Welcome back. Horticulture's fell to rushing, and it is a cheery day. I walked in this morning. The sun is shining. A little chilly, but nothing like the snow we had this past weekend. Java, you know, your kids went out there playing in the snow.
Yeah, and I was trying to remember, and I think, honestly, maybe not for Java because he's eight.
Yeah.
But this was the first snow, like, for my girls. She's Marley's four, yeah. And the other one is two. So this was like their first time because it was so funny. They woke up in the morning. We have this big window in our they overlooks the backyard in the front room, and they opened the window and they was like, "It's winter," because the snow was actually falling down.
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
It was just, you know.
Well, we, you know, you're out on the outskirts of the western side of town. I'm right in the middle of it, and I didn't expect to get any because, you know, Jackson's sort of like a heat sump with all the pavement and stuff like that. But it started late that night, and the next morning I had a good little snow. Set up my garden the day before so I could take some pictures to make it look like more than it was. Didn't have to. Had plenty.
Yeah, if you were ready for the pictures, then you pretty got some good ones.
Funniest pictures I've got, though, are of gardens the next day with snowmen standing out in the middle of nothing. No snow on the nothing. It was completely gone, but there's snowmen just standing out in the open. They're saying, "What the heck? What's up here? My nose, where'd it go?"
That's snow in the south for you. One day you're here, the next day you're gone.
Yep. Well, we got plenty of stuff to talk about today, but folks, it's a live program. We've got plenty of time to chat about whatever's on your mind. Last week, I got stumped on something that, you know, that head-smacking moment where you, I would say, you know, usually I used to smack my head and make that little noise, but I can't now because that's the spot where I take my temperature all the time, and I don't like it being all red and having to, but anyway, a guy called about a plant called turmeric. He wanted to grow some turmeric in his garden because he likes Indian cuisine for the subcontinent of India. And I said, I don't know about it. And I got an email from a guy named Doug Hammond, and he's from down in Bogachita, which is Louisiana side of the South Mississippi state line. He said he's a cook by trade, but he grows turmeric. He said, "I live in Bogachita, grow it every year. It grows from a bulb root. I got mine from Amazon." He said, "When it freezes, they die down. When I dig them up, save some for planting to cook with the rest. You got to be dry roots to grind to grate into powder. And if you'll come back." Well, that's in Bogachita. It'll come back. Come to find out, I grow its close cousin. The Latin name of it is curcuma. Curcuma is a real close cousin that grows all over the Deep South. It's called hidden ginger. Nice little leaves, knee high, a little bit taller than knee high. Looks sort of like a canna, and the flowers are hidden down in the foliage. They're bigger than my fist. They're pink and yellow. They're beautiful little flowers, but they're hidden in the foliage. And it grows from a thick mat of little rhizomes, sort of like iris. And I use mine in Thai cooking, but it's used just like ginger. It's in the ginger family. He said he got his turmeric from Amazon. I bet if you buy some in a store, some fresh turmeric roots, you can plant them. And they'll grow all summer. When they die down, dig them up. If you live in North Mississippi, North Alabama, Arkansas, Tennessee, dig them up. Save some to plant the next year, and they grow perfectly well. So one of those head-smacking moments. You know, live and learn, eh?
Well, is this one of the ones you grow in your truck?
No, no, no. Okay. Because the leaves blow around, but I've got three different places in my garden. I don't actually grow turmeric. The turmeric is curcuma longi or something like that. I grow curcuma petiolata. Just to let you know, I can say that stuff.
Now, with your when you say you put it in your Thai food, it gives that kind of sweet heat because it's a ginger.
It actually has a hotter, zestier flavor than regular ginger. But anyway, it's an old pass along plant. Wrote about it in Pass Along Plant book back a couple of decades ago, and I just had one of those, you know, brain things where you just can't remember stuff. Anyway, got plenty of stuff to talk about, and I do appreciate Doug writing in and helping me out about that, helping us all about that. If you got some things to chat about, it's toll free 1-877-MPB-RING. We're going to start down in Ellisville, Mississippi. Hey, Mark, what's going on in Jones County?
Hey, Felder. Hey, I heard you had a granddaughter.
I do, a little larvae, a little rushing larvae. Her name, her mother, who's by the way from Waynesville, Waynesboro. Excuse me, not Waynesville. Waynesboro, just the other side of your neck of the woods. She calls her Allie. I call her AJ. Mama's gonna win. So what's up, man?
Well, I just had a question about transplanting elderberries. I had a bunch of volunteer elderberry bushes that grew up in the yard, and it just treated them as weeds. I practiced pruning on them after going to your workshop at Hutto's and everything. Uh-huh. But you know, now that we know that they're so valuable, and I'll just say it and just move on. They directly destroy coronaviruses.
Okay. We do not
talk about that.
We don't talk about medicinal herbs on this program.
Right, but just the bottom line is I want to preserve the plants, I don't want to mow them down.
Yeah,
and,
it's a perennial. The type of elderberry we have here in the lower south is not the elderberry tree, which is really a large shrub, small tree they have in Europe, in northern part of America. We have one of those herbaceous perennial that dies down to the ground and comes back up every year.
Right. I tried to transplant them in the spring. I dug up about six of them, and only one of them survived and everything. And I was wondering, do you think that it's safe to dig them up right now? I mean, they don't seem they've gone to sleep. I mean, it's odd. They still have a few green leaves up at the top of the plant.
Yeah, because we don't really have a hard winter. Normal winter, they'll die to the ground and come back up as perennials. And they can make quite a large plant. So if you can find some smaller ones to transplant, they'll be full size and bloom and have berries this year, but the smaller ones are easier to dig and more likely to survive. But yeah, you can move them. Now would be a great time.
Okay, I didn't mow all last summer in the backyard. Well, that was my story and sticking to it, so I didn't mow over the elderberries.
Yeah.
Okay. Well. All right. Well, then I'll dig them up and assume that they're relatively asleep, and hopefully they'll be okay and everything in the spring.
All righty, man. Say hey to Mama.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Okay. See you, Mark.
All right. Bye bye.
All right. Elderberry is one of our most overlooked big native perennial wildflowers. You know, so it makes a small tree, a nice little clump. Big flat cluster, dinner plate size clusters of white flowers in the late early summer, followed by clusters of purple berries. Not to be confused with pokeberry, which has little hangy down things of flowers and hangy down things of berries, but the elderberry has flat dinner plate size flowers and berries. Beautiful plant. You can cook the flowers. It's just a terrific native plant. So, anyway, let's move up to Madison to talk with Frank. Good morning, sir.
Good morning to you, sir.
How are you?
I really enjoy your show. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
So, a couple years ago, I bought my wife a Myers lime tree for Mother's Day, and I'd say it was probably about 3 feet tall and hot. And that first spring and summer, we got some buds and blooms, and then we got some limes. This past summer, it bloomed. But then it grew those tiny little green little baby limes, and then they all fell off.
Yeah.
And then we didn't get anything again. And I'm kind of wondering, what do I need to do to make sure that plant, that tree, is going to produce this time around?
Yeah, well, a lot of the citrus bloom in the late winter, early spring, and sometimes, you know, so normally, once they get established, they'll get in this rhythm of blooming, you know, late winter, early spring. and then fruiting in the summer, harvest in the fall, late summer and fall. So it might have just been that the first year it was confused because it had just been planted and, you know, that sort of. When you disturb a plant, whether it's digging it or planting it or hard pruning or hurricane or anything like that, sometimes it kicks them into blooming out of season. So that might have been all that was. You got this in the ground or in a big pot?
It's in a pot.
Yeah.
It's in a pot.
Put it outside every day you can, except when it's going to be frosting or freezing. It needs a real sunshine. It needs a real sunshine, not just through a window. And it needs the humidity. It needs the outdoor is better. And only drag it in if it's going to actually freeze. That's the first thing I say. And the second thing, it's real important when it blooms that it get pollinated by bees. And I don't know where you live in Madison, but if you live right in the middle of a suburb where there's not a whole bunch of wildflowers, may not have a bunch of bees to pollinate.
We do have some bees in our front yard, and I make sure I move the pot around to make sure it gets sun as much as I can.
Yeah.
And then when the bees start getting active, I definitely leave it in the places where they are. So I think that's happening.
Yeah.
I'm wondering about the fertilization.
Well, any kind of all-purpose, good houseplant fertilizer. Look for one where the numbers are about the same. You know, there's so many gimmicky fertilizers. I get confused, and I took the course in college. But you want something where the numbers are about the same. A lot of times, it'll have a high first number, the nitrogen, which is good for green-growing plants, ferns and, you know, things mostly for foliage. That middle number is what helps flowers and fruits, but you don't need a big high one. A lot of times, they sell them, they got a really, really high middle number, that's unnecessary. So anything where the numbers are pretty close to the same. What I use for my potted plants is a slow-release type of bead. It's called Osmocote. You know, I don't sell anything. Here at MPB, we're not sponsored. We don't sell anything, but I'm just telling you what I use as a gardener. This stuff called Osmocote, little round beads, you put a little bit of that on the potting soil once a year, and every time you water it, it automatically absorbs a little water, squeezes out a little fertilizer, washes in the soil. And once a year is all my plants need. And towards the fall, when it starts running out, they need a little bit of break. So a little bit of Osmocote, and then maybe in the growing season, every month or two, hit it with some kind of liquid fertilizer. But the main thing is no more than what directions call for.
Okay, and I haven't fertilized it in a while, so it's probably due for some nutrients now, well, I'd say.
You know, plants growing in dirt, real dirt, D-I-R-T dirt, has got nutrients in it, and it holds nutrients a long time. Potting soil doesn't naturally have the main nutrients, and it doesn't hold nutrients because, you know, they wash away. So it's really important for potted plants. And keep in mind, my grandmother had an old rubber tree. I don't think she ever fertilized it, but it was pitiful because it was starving. But a little bit of fertilizer, you know, at least once a year for potted plants helps replace all that washes away. And by the way, okay, when those little fruits fell off, it tells me that the flowers didn't get pollinated. And it'll start to form a fruit, but there's no seeds growing in it, the little fruit type thing, they just abort. So usually that's a lack of pollination.
Okay, well, wow, thanks for helping me understand what's going on with the plant. I really appreciate it.
Hey, meanwhile, go out to some place and find some little bitty small golden Christmas ornaments that hang on it.
Yes, we'll do that for sure. My son will enjoy that.
Yeah, well, get him to help and act like you're playing a trick on mama. You know what I'm saying.
I do.
I mean, teach the boy to develop his sense of absurd.
Oh, he loves the plants in our patio garden. Can't keep him out of them.
Let's punk mom. Let's punk mom with some fake oranges, lemons.
Okay, we'll do that.
See you for Hank.
Thank you very much, sir. Take care.
You know, Java, maybe I shouldn't do this. But, you know,
I think you should, though. It's all in good fun.
It's all good. By the way, the fella talked earlier about the fruit seminar. This is the first year in 12 or 15, I guess, that we're not doing a home fruit seminar at Hutto's. We always do one in January, early February. But because of the Rona, you know, I talked with the folks at Hutto's, and they said, you know, we probably don't even need to advertise, you know, this. They got a lot of great fruit plants, probably the best in this whole part of the South, good local types and varieties. I really appreciate the effort they put in that, but we're not having the fruit seminar because just, you know, not only does pollen spread from plant to plant, but spittle does, too, from people to people. We're not going to do that. Anyway, Horticulture's Fell Rushing, Mississippi Public Broadcasting. We're going to come back with more of the Gestalt Gardener. Got the lines wide open. If you want to give us a call, we'll be right back.
Deep South Dining is the show all about the culture of Southern flavor. From fried chicken and collard greens to shrimp and grits and a glass of sweet tea. Subscribe now to the podcast using any podcast app or download our MPB public media app.
Dozy, dozy, little lambsy divey, a kiddly divey too, wouldn't you? Yes, mazzy dozy, 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 little lambsy divey, a kiddly divey too, wouldn't you? If the words sound queer and funny to your ear, a little bit jumbled and jivey, sing mazzy dozy, dozy, and little lambsy divey.
All righty, folks. Joe and the Piper's old tune, Mary's Eat Oats and Goats Eat Oats and Little Something to Eat Ivy.
I can't see. I heard a dozy dough in there somewhere, too.
Yeah, dozy's oats. Does eat oats. Mares eat oats and does eat oats and little lambs eat ivy. Toodly doo. Welcome back, folks. Horticulture's Fell to Rush. You give me a call, toll-free 1-877-MPB, and let's talk about it. Matter of fact, it's here in Jackson. We're going to talk to Hibbett. Good morning, Hibbett. How are you?
Felder.
Good morning.
Good morning. I had a large Fuyu persimmon tree that has really produced a lot of persimmons last year, but it's gotten so tall it's about 15 feet tall, and I need some advice about how to prune it.
Well, you know, the Japanese persimmons, and by the way, Fuyu is the best because not only is it not astringent, but it's one that pollinates itself. Some of the others don't, so it's probably the best. Fuyu, some people call it Fuyu Gaki, but it's, you know, when it's completely mature, it's still considered a small tree. It'll get, you know, spread out and all, but really all you have to do is treat it like a large bonsai tree and just simply prune out some of the tall stuff and thin out some of the other stuff so it has sort of a characteristic like a gnarly old type tree and just thin it out. You know, leave some unpruned, but if you'll cut out some of the taller limbs, don't leave stubs. Cut them flush with wherever, whatever it starts growing off of. Follow it back, cut it off right there, and just sort of thin it out, some of the tall stuff, and then thin out a few of the branches on the limbs that are left to give it kind of almost an Asian look, like a bonsai type tree. And there's no problem cutting out the big stuff. Just leave some of the other stuff unpruned.
So even the main branch that goes straight up, I can cut some of that.
Yeah, I mean it's just, you know, it sounds weird, but it's like plucking eyebrows. You know, leave the stuff you want. But, it doesn't hurt to, I mean, you've seen what the power company does to oak trees. Anyway, no, just cut out the stuff that's where you don't want and leave stuff that is where you want and then a little extra.
Oh, that's great advice.
It ain't going to be easy. And by the way, Hibbett, if you don't have I don't know if you got a chainsaw or something. The saw that I use, and I taught their arboriculture, the tree surgery course at State, but when I'm knocking around my yard, I don't have a chainsaw. But I've got one of those hand saws that's curved, and it's got teeth that point backwards, so it cuts when you pull rather than when you push. And a pruning saw like that works. You could get in tight little spaces between things a lot better than you can any other saw. So one of those little curved blade pruning saws that cuts when you pull, it makes real quick work. It doesn't have to use gasoline. You don't have to worry about falling and eating you up.
Well, good. I'll get one of those.
Yeah, they're really. But look for one that's got like a triple cut, and the blades are pointing. The teeth are pointing towards you, so it cuts when you pull. Real easy to get in tight spaces with them.
Thanks.
Okay, Hibbett, good luck. Hey, this is a good day to get out there, but be careful of getting them up on the ladder because it can be crazy when you get more than 2 feet off the ground.
Absolutely.
See you, guy. Okay. Staying in Jackson, we're going to talk with Sadie. Hey, Sadie, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. What's going on?
I heard you talking about transplanting elderberries with somebody a while ago, and I would like to see if I can transplant possum haw trees or bushes, if I can find some in the woods, would that work too?
Yeah, you could, you know, any kind of plant. Here's the problem with transplanting stuff, woody plants, you know, from the woods, is, you know, if you stick your arm straight out and wiggle your fingers, that's where the roots are, and you're going to be mostly moving neck and shoulders. So mm-hmm. the smaller one you get, the more likely it's going to sprout roots again before it sucks itself dry in the summertime. So smaller plants are always a better candidate for moving than bigger plants. The problem is, out in the woods, a lot of these are separate male and female, and you can't
right.
tell which is which unless they got berries or don't, and they don't do that till they get a little bit big. See, so if you really like the plant, what I would do is, I mean, if you really, really want, it's a beautiful plant, full of berries this time of year, middle of the winter, would be to go ahead and go online and get a male and a female. They sell them with, named varieties. Matter of fact, I think one of the males they sell is called Southern Gentleman.
Okay.
It's just grown as a pollinator. I wish I was making this stuff up. But anyway, it's just hard to tell whether you're getting male or female until they're big enough to be almost too big to move.
Yeah. I'm trying to landscape my yard with just native plants, only other than bulbs.
Yeah.
And so I've been transplanting oak leaf hydrangeas, and I have a lot of, I think they're called chokeberries.
What kind of berry?
Chokeberries.
Oh, yeah, chokeberry. Yeah, yeah.
They have a salt like rhubarb.
Yeah,
real pretty.
Yeah. My go-to, I'm past president of Native Plant Society. I love native plants, but by no means is my garden all native because I like Asian plants and European plants, blah, 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 blah. But one of my two favorite natives are a really good combination is our native Yaupon holly, which is, it's a small tree, but it's evergreen, but it's not real heavy, thick, dense, and it has berries. The females have berries, but that's one of my favorite. And they've got a weeping one that's real nice, and they got sort of pretty berries in the wintertime. But native Yaupon holly. And then, if you're looking for effect, you can't go wrong with one of those plus a little gem magnolia plus a palmetto. That little combination looks so good all year long. And everything else just sort of swirls around it.
Okay, that's a great idea. And you think I can get these at Hutto's? Or just have to
look? Don't know. Some garden centers, Hutto's really special. They got a lot of stuff, but they really specialize in bedding plants and fruit plants and things like that. But they are available. And by the way, if you'll shoot me an email, I'll send you a list of really a really simple but thorough list of landscape quality native plants, trees, shrubs, vines, perennials, that kind of stuff.
Oh, I love that.
Real simple little. It's a list that I pare down from all the possibilities to what most people plant.
Okay, I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you.
You better say, hey, good luck on it.
Thank you.
By the way, I'm sitting here doing a little arrangement. Java, every week we do the podcast. You let me send you a picture, if I think about it.
Yeah, but I need the picture you show me of your snow garden in the back of your truck.
In the back of the truck, it was a bunch of snow. This garden I grow, a lot of people don't know that I've been growing stuff in the back of my dad's old pickup truck since my son was in a child restraint seat. I call it a baby seat. And he's a dad now and army officer and all that stuff. But I've been growing stuff in the back of my truck a long time. And it's got to be able to take all summer. If I'm gone to England all summer, ain't nobody going to water my stuff. So it's got to grow in a big pot, I made a little frame thing. It's got to grow with no water, broiling hot sun all summer. It's got to grow all winter, freezing cold, covered with ice, and it's got to be able to take 81 miles an hour. And I found some plants that'll do that. So we could do that. I tell you what, we can do that this week and next week. I'm taking this picture now for next week.
Okay.
And it's a nice little combination of gray stuff.
Gray?
Gray stuff, yeah. Spanish moss, which oddly enough looks just like my hair. I look like I got a wig of Spanish moss on all the time, long, straggly, gray-looking stuff. I've got Spanish moss, which are a terrific, unique native plant. It's beloved all over the world, and it grows just all over Mississippi. I grow a bunch in my garden. Spanish moss, which is real gray. I've got this plant called Artemisia, which is sort of a silvery gray green. It's, you would say it's gray from a distance unless you put it next to Spanish moss. It is one of my most dependable understory spreading type of perennial. It's just a terrific plant, Artemisia. And the one I grow is called Powis Castle. It's not invasive like some of the other artemisias. It spreads on top of the ground. You can cut it back if you want to, but it's a really good ferny-looking silvery gray-green plant in the wintertime. And then I've got an old passalong plant, old heirloom passalong plant. A lot of people call it hens and chicks. It's a succulent. Now, if anybody's listening to the podcast up north, this is not your hens and chicks, the Sempervivum. This is one called Graptopetalum. Some people call it ghost plant. The little fat succulent leaves, you can break a leaf off and it grows a whole new plant from that leaf. But it's a nice little gray, summer ghosty look. Well, it's called ghost plant. It's a good little succulent. So I've got those. And then the last thing before we before we take this call is I've got my coffee cup, my MPB coffee cup, which I bring every year, every week, and it is nasty looking. Java. You know, most guys get it. Some women get it. But some people are purely disgusted about my coffee cup because it's not dirty.
It's not. And that's the thing I want people to say, especially when they see this picture. It's not dirty.
No, it's coffee stain. What I do is I make coffee and I drink it and I empty it out. And I let it dry, and it's got an incredible brown coffee stain from months and months and months. Yeah, I rinse it out. I just don't scrub it.
But you know who's really going to get it?
Who's that?
The coffee drinkers.
So, yeah.
They get
it. Yeah. But, I mean, it's, you know, the inside, it's a pretty MPB mug. It's really pretty blue and all like that, but that coffee, I love it. But anyway, I've got it, and I also arranged my little face mask with the Mississippi State flag on it because it's blue and red. But the neat part about it is it's got that one star, that one gold star that represents the Native Americans, you know, the Choctaws, the Cherokees, Chickasaws. And the reason I did that because the last plant, and I'm probably boring everybody about it, my edible plant of the week, I try to bring a native plant, an heirloom, and an edible plant, is my tomato. You can see, look how yellow this thing is.
Bright, yeah. Bright yellow.
This is what it's called Lemon Boy. I picked my lemons, I picked my tomatoes right before that first frost last fall, brought the green ones in, and one at a time they've turned their color, but instead of red, I've got one that's kind of a golden yellow. And so I got it right by my coffee cup and right by that little star on the Mississippi State flag that represents the Native Americans. So there, boom, next week. Meanwhile, let's go up to Tupelo, talk with Madeline, who's been hanging on listening to my diatribe. Hey, Madeline.
Hi, how are you today?
Fine. I'm just rambling. What you got going on?
I have a question about pruning. We bought our house a couple years ago, and there's some very large hydrangea plants. I don't know what type, but they're over 8 feet tall. And last year, my husband cut one down in attempts to remove it, but never got back to remove the stump, and then it regrew in a beautiful short, maybe 3'5".
And you know, so many people are scared to prune their plants because it might kill them. Your husband tried to kill it and it came back.
Exactly. Well, now the other ones, they're so large, blocking windows and stuff. We see how pretty they can become. We want to trim those back, but didn't know the right time of year. He got lucky last year, but now we can't remember because of the crazy year when he did it. But best time to actually prune those, and then how far back to prune them?
Okay, well, first of all, your husband's already found out you can't prune them back too far. They're going to sprout.
Okay.
They'll sprout back out. But keep in mind that wherever you make a cut, whether it's a hydrangea or holly or rose or crepe myrtle, whatever you cut, it's going to sprout out right there. See, so if he leaves some stems a little tall, some medium, and some short, it's going to fill out like that. Okay.
Okay.
So keep in mind, wherever you make it,
create your shape.
That's right. That's right. You know, higher in the middle, smaller, you know, that kind of thing. I cut a boxwood back that was chest high to me, and I couldn't stretch my arms out being a big boxwood. I cut it back to knee high, but it's still shaped like that, you know, the bare stems, and it's just sprouted out like that. So keep that in mind when you prune. But also, hydrangeas bloom on new growth as long as it comes out of last year's growth. So if you cut them really, really far back, they'll sprout back out, but they may not bloom this year. So what you might want to do is cut some of them really hard and then just sort of cut some back a little bit so you have some flowers, and then next year cut them back.
Okay.
And then the last thing about pruning hard, it's called rejuvenation pruning. When you cut plants back really, really hard and they sprout back out, the roots are still intact. So that new growth just jumps up. So it's really important to come back when you prune a plant hard by early summer, June or early July or so, and snip the tips off that new growth so it bushes out instead of shooting up overhead.
Okay, so we can, you know, here this month, next month, can go ahead and do a hard prune.
Yep, and then
don't worry if it doesn't bloom, but just kind of knock it off again just a little bit early summer.
Yeah, and, you know, just cut it back because, you know, again, when you cut those new stems back, they'll bush out. And you might even cut the new growth on that back if you want a real thick bush. But and you may want to leave one or two stems this spring not pruned and see if they bloom. Who knows? But the main thing, when you prune hard, keep in mind, your neighbor's going to talk about you. Just hold your head up and go on. The closer you wait to spring, the shorter, because it takes a few weeks for the new growth to come out. If you prune them now, it's just going to be that much longer before they put new growth out. So whenever he gets around to it, but you can do this even after they leaf out in the springtime. No problem cutting them back. But you just want to get all your pruning done by early summer.
Good deal. Well, thank you. I sure appreciate it.
Okay, have fun. All righty. I'm sitting here posing my little plants, my little scene. We will put the picture. I set up a scene before it snowed the other day with my Nandina with the red berries, my Mahonia with the brilliant yellow flowers this time of year. Beautiful plant. Oregon grape holly is what some people call it. Sort of reddish stems of my crepe myrtles. And I moved my grandmother's concrete chicken around there. So she's in the picture too with her little red comb and all that. So anyway, we're going to take a real quick break. Come back a little bit of music. The best music I could think of, my go-to music when I'm stressed. I play cheesy music all the time, but when I'm stressed, this is my go-to tune. And then we're going to be taking your calls after that. Me and Java Chapman, Kevin Farrell, all the folks here at MPB, we're going to take just a little break and come right back. Stick with us, folks.
Some things in life are bad, they can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, that grumble, give a whistle. And this'll help things turn out for the best. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten, and that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps, just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing. Hey.
Always look on the bright side of life.
Come on.
Always look on the bright side of life.
Life is quite absurd, and death's the final word. You must always face the curtain with a bow. Forget about your scene, give the audience a grin. Enjoy it, it's your last chance anyhow. You'll see it's all a show, keep them laughing as you go. Just remember that the last laugh is on you. And
always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the right side of life.
Come on, boy, cheer up.
Always look on the right side of life.
I'm Dr. Jimmy Stewart. The original Southern Remedy is available as a podcast. Subscribe using your favorite podcasting app. You can email a question to remedy@mpbonline.org. The doctor is always in on the original Southern Remedy.
Okie dokie, folks. Welcome back. Horticulture's Fell to Rushing. I've been arranging my little thing here. My native plant of the week is the gray Spanish moss. which is an epiphyte. It grows in trees, not on trees, not in trees. Very much the same family as pineapples. Also got the gray-green Artemisia called Palace Castle. I've got my gray ghost plant. We call it hens and chicks or hens and biddies here in the South. I got my yellow lemon boy tomato right by my nasty-looking MPB cup and the wonderful little golden star on the Mississippi state flag. You want to give us a call? Get the lines wide open. Toll-free 1-877-MPB-RING. Wide open, folks. Now's a chance to yak with somebody who doesn't know it all, can't remember some of it, wish he didn't know some of it, and not afraid for somebody to call and help us out like Doug did last week with the growing turmeric, which is a little, looks like a canna. It's in the ginger family, and it's hardy on the coast, semi-hardy in central Mississippi, north Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee. You need to dig it up in the fall, dry some of it to grate and cook with. It's kind of zesty. And then replant the next spring. It's a tough little plant that really grows well in the shade if you got a shade garden. But I love my hidden ginger. It's a great little plant. One of the things that we always do this time of year, we have a home fruit seminar. Plants that do well in the landscape, that look good in the landscape, and part of the year have something on it you can eat, like blueberries and figs and muscadines and pears and jujubes and gummy berries and things like that. I usually have a seminar at Hutto's in Jackson. They specialize in this kind of stuff. But we agreed, because of the coronavirus, probably not good to get an old guy like me spewing in front of a bunch of other folks. So we'd like to mention this. I have a publication that I put together. It's real simple. I work with local home fruit enthusiasts who grow everything. Put together a little thing on landscape quality fruit plants for Mississippi gardens. It works in Tennessee and Alabama and Arkansas and Louisiana as well. So if you want to shoot if you want a copy of it, go to my website. Go to my blog, Felder Rushing blog, and I'll put a link on it as soon as I get home today. Meanwhile, let's go down to the coast to Ocean Springs. Hey, Becky, how are you?
I'm doing just fine.
Good. What's up?
I would like for you to speak about clematis or clematis, however. Yeah. I happen to have spent a lot of years living over in England and Europe, and they grew so profusely. But down here in Ocean Springs, I get lots of blooms, but not this massive.
Yeah.
So please talk about good ones for down south and best how to prune them.
First of all, I live in England part of the year, have for the past 11 or 12, and it grows up the side of buildings. And one of my favorites is a real pink one. It's an old pass along plant there. They've got a better climate for it than we do, because it stays cool at night. Clematis, whatever you want to say. Although we have a native one, but the really pretty ones aren't going to be as showy in our hot, humid, all night, nonstop summers and mild winters. You know, that really does better, a little bit cooler climate. So what I would suggest would be, right off the bat, would be planted on the east side of something, so it gets plenty of sunshine in the morning, but protect from hot afternoon heat. And as far as varieties, most of them do okay. Most of them just do all right. So many. There's a clematis society that has some incredible flowers that they just don't perform well here. Sort of like the David Austin roses, the English roses. I'm real familiar with those. And here in the South, their flowers are just smaller. They're just not as luxurious as we wish it would be. So anyway, any of the varieties. As far as pruning, though, there's some that bloom on new growth and some that bloom on old growth. I can't keep them straight. So, you know, that's the big thing. I can't remember which ones you can prune back hard. But in general, for folks who don't know what they're doing, is plant them on something, climb on, and then every year or two, cut one of the stems back. So you always have some new growth coming up down at the bottom, and always have stuff up at the top, just to make sure that you hit it right where there's new or old growth bloomer. But there's so, Becky, there's so many beautiful clematis that, first of all, you can't get them here, because they don't sell them here, because they don't grow here. But there's quite a few that do okay with morning sun, not so much hot afternoon sun.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, I wish we could do that. You know, there's nothing like an arbor that's got a rose and a clematis and our native trumpet honeysuckle all growing on the same thing. I've got a vine arbor in my yard. A special, a big, tall arbor, and it's got the top of it is curved like a covered wagon hoops, and I grow, I guess, 11 different kinds of vines on it, and including our native, which they grow a lot in England, our native passion flower, the passiflora, maypop. It's a terrific plant, and they grow that all over England, and it's wild here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I learned a lot about that when I lived over there, and I grew just beautiful clematises, and I keep struggling. There just has to be a good southern variety.
Well, you know, let me scratch my head. Tune in next week, because I don't mind getting stumped at all. I do not mind getting stumped on stuff and look stuff up, and a lot of times it's stuff I knew I just couldn't remember, but I'll come up with maybe some folks will email in with their list of their best performers for here. So collectively, we'll figure it out.
Thank you very much.
Okay, appreciate it, Becky. Okay, let's go over to Mobile, Alabama. Hey, Carly, good morning. Carla?
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Fine, thank you. Struggling a little bit on some stuff, but I don't mind. I'm an old guy. I can take it.
I was going to say, that's part of our age, isn't it?
Yeah.
I have two questions. One, and you were just talking about the passion flower. I have a passion flower, and I also have a climbing aster. And I need to cut those back, but I don't know when.
Okay, well, both of those bloom on new growth. So you can cut them back anytime from, you know, if you cut it back, it takes a little while from the sprout back out, not as much as the shrub. So the closer you wait towards spring, even if they got new leaves on them, the less downtime they'll have. But you can prune them like you would a rose, you know. Climbing roses, you want to wait till they get through blooming. But both of these plants bloom on new growth. So pretty much anytime you get around to it. And if you've got them climbing, like I was telling the lady before, you can cut some of it down real close to the ground, you know, foot or so tall, some medium, and then leave some. So that way you have plenty of healthy growth, but you still have the tall stuff.
Right. Okay. And I have one more question. My husband heard you talking about Spanish moss.
Uh-huh.
Where can we get Spanish moss? Is there any, or you just have to go out and pull it out of a tree?
You just got to turn into a moss picker. There's a, you know, it's all pretty much all over the South, even up close to Memphis. There's some, you know. Mm-hmm. So, but what there's a patch outside a neighborhood in Jackson where they got a lot of it, and the trees along the street. And what I do is after a big thunderstorm, I go out there and pick up what's been blown down.
Okay.
And keep this in mind when you're planting, though, because I have a whole arbor, an arbor that's solid Spanish moss. And it's just incredible. And I put it in my crepe myrtles. But keep in mind, it grows down, not up. So when you're putting it someplace, get a long pole and put it up really, really high so it'll grow down. It won't grow back up.
Okay, that sounds good.
You can always tell when somebody did it on the weekend because it's all just high enough where you can reach your hand. But you can also tie some of it up on a stick and throw it up really high. And it looks funny at first, like throwing tinsel on a Christmas tree versus placing tinsel. But within months, it starts dripping down and growing everywhere.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks for your call, Carla.
Mm-hmm.
All righty. Horticulture's Fell to Rushing. We're going to take a little bit of a short break. We got plenty of time, though. Got the lines open if you want to give us a call. We'd like to pay homage to Thomas Grillo, who lives in Jackson. He is a thereminist. He is the only instrument you can play without touching it. And he did this theme song, the Gestalt Garden theme song, doing a duet with himself on a theremin. We'll be right back with more Gestalt Gardener right after this.
Walker, the Lady Auto Mechanic, host of AutoCorrect. If you're enjoying this podcast, try my podcast, AutoCorrect. We help steer you in the right direction with your car problems. Find me on any podcast platform or at autocorrect.mpbonline.org.
All righty, folks. Welcome back to Horticulture's Failure Rush. I'm here cleaning up desperately the mess I made because Michelle McAdoo is going to be in her program next about what's going on all around the state. And I made a mess in here. Anyway, we're going to go to, from Tremont, Joey and Tremont. Good morning, sir.
How you doing, Sir Felder?
So far, so good. What's up?
Well, I got a question about a Rose Sharon tree.
Yeah.
Can I prune that with a pickup?
Yeah. You trying to get rid of it or just cut it down real close?
Oh, well, this done got up too tall, and I just like to get back shrub size.
Yeah. You know, if you got an old enough truck that got a steel bumper, I'd say go for it, but it'd be better go ahead and just take a saw to it.
All right.
But keep it
about knee high.
You can go wherever you cut it, it's going to sprout out right there. So you might want to cut it below where you want it to grow back up to. And if there's some, you know, cut it sort of like a, if you can imagine a Christmas tree that's being cut with no leaves left on it, still kind of a, you know, tall in the middle and the, you know, sort of spread it out towards, in other words, don't just cut it straight across. It's just going to look goofy. Although there's nothing wrong with goofy. Don't get me wrong.
No, I like goofy.
Okay, well, just go out there and whack it off. But if you don't have a steel bumper, and if there's anybody, and plus it could be tire tracks because the ground's wet. I'd go find a saw.
All right. One more quickie.
Will not hurt to prune it though.
One more quickie, if you don't mind.
Mm-hmm.
I planted turnip greens and mustard greens, and the soil was fertile from this summer where I fertilized it pretty good. And they were just puny, and we got out there, and I fertilized them again. They've come up, but they're turning red, and they ain't doing too good.
You know, a lot of times turnips are going to turn red when it's really cold. You know, that's just a natural response. But also, if you fertilize it last summer, some parts of that fertilizer are still there, the phosphorus, the potassium, but they don't have any nitrogen. Nitrogen is what greens plants up, and it doesn't last. It washes away. So if you'll get some kind of little type of something with a high first number, and just a little pinch out, and just scatter a little bit around them, then water it in real good so it doesn't burn the foliage. But nitrogen is real important for green-growing plants, and it washes away.
All right. Well, that answered my question, and I thank you, sir.
All right, sir. Appreciate it, Joey.
Have a better year than we had last year.
Well, I'm calling this 2020 weird. Appreciate it, man.
Bye-bye.
Okay, let's go now to Gene. He says Russellville or Huntsville, but, you know, it could also be Athens. Where are you, Gene?
I'm in Russellville.
Okay. Cool. Nice town.
Yeah.
What's going on up there?
I have a question. Last week you were talking about a holly that mm-hmm. blooms in the wintertime that has yellow blooms.
Holly with yellow. No. Yeah, it's called Oregon grape holly. It's not really holly. It just got leaves that sort of look like holly.
Okay.
The name of it is Mahonia, Mahonia. They call it Oregon grape holly because the leaves sort of look like holly, and after the yellow flowers, it makes little strings of real pretty little blue grape-looking things. And if you want to see some pretty ones, I bet they've got some really good ones at the Botanical Garden over there in Huntsville, one of the best botanic gardens in the South. But it'll have lots of yellow flowers right now.
Okay. I'm going to Huntsville today, so I'll go by and look at it.
Okay. And also, for our podcast, I'm posting a picture of my little garden scene that has snow on it, but Mahonia, my grandmother's chicken, my Nandina berries, crepe emerald stems, but I got the Mahonia with the yellow flowers, so you'll see what it looks like. And
it's on your podcast picture?
Well, I don't know, how long does it take to put something like that up, Java?
It'll be up later on this afternoon around 4 o'clock.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, if you want to see what it looks like, but Mahonia is it's a good, and it's native to the Pacific Northwest, to Oregon and Washington State, grows perfectly well, likes a little shade here.
Okay.
All righty, Gene. Tell the folks at the Botanic Garden that said, hey, they're good friends of mine.
Okie dokie. Thanks a lot.
You bet, Gene. All righty. I cleaned my mess up, It's Spanish moss. I got Spanish moss in my coffee, so I am going to actually have to rinse it out. But I got my little Lemon Boy tomato. It, you know, when you pick a tomato green, it doesn't ripen. It doesn't turn red or yellow because it's ripening. It's a slow decay. So when you pick a tomato in the fall, whether it's a red kind or yellow kind or whatever, it's going to color up. It's going to get softer, not going to get any better tasting. But it sure does look pretty. Anyway, there's plenty of stuff we can do. It's a little early for planting spring vegetables, but it's getting time to set out things like onion sets and maybe some Irish potatoes in a month or so, snow peas, things like that. But it's a great time to start digging holes, putting out fruit trees, shrubs, roses. This is the best time for planting stuff so they get a chance to get established before summertime starts to beat them back. It's a great time. We got plenty of other things we can do, but I'm going to take a little break, be back same time, same place next week, talking about gardening in the South, gardening in general, but particularly in the South. I'm Horticulture's Felder Rushing, me and Java Chapman and folks here at MPB. We appreciate y'all joining this party and being part of it. And if you get a chance, take a kid to a farmer's markets aren't really going right now, but garden centers are starting to get some cool stuff in. Take a kid to a garden center and let them poke around and find something pretty they like. We're going to pot some pansies or something like that. Show them how to do what we do best, and that's get dirty. See y'all next week.